This morning our speaker is Rabbi Rami Shapiro. Rabbi Rami devotes his time to writing and teaching. Many of you read his blog and the columns he writes for Spirituality and Health magazine. Rabbi Shapiro is a well-known author and has published more than 30 books. Today he will speak on the topic, The Art of Being Surrendered, The Paradox of Spirituality. Let's welcome Rabbi Rami.
Good morning. Wow, full house. You can't tell from the front row. Just sitting back, it's more like, wow, that's pretty good. The Art of Being Surrendered. Okay, there's no art. You can't do anything about it. Thank you. Do you know what the word iatrogenic means? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Iatrogenic. Iatrogenic is when you go to the hospital for a broken leg and you come out with lung disease. It's when they're trying to do something for you and it ends up making everything worse. It's the disease that's produced by the cure. Right? That's what the word means, iatrogenic. Religion is iatrogenic. Right? Religion has to convince you of a disease so it can sell you a cure. And so for example, the disease of Judaism is the disease of exile and alienation, right? Adam and Eve are kicked out of the garden, and Jews are always trying to get back to the garden, right? That's essentially what Judaism is. We're alienated from God, so we do what God says, and that's how we get back together with God. The iatrogenic disease of Christianity is sin, especially original sin. If you happen to have been a Catholic once, you know, you may still carry the residence of original sin. Islam, the sin is pride. Buddhism, the sin is Krishna, addiction, addictive grasping for things. Hinduism, it's ignorance. You're ignorant of your true nature of the reality, true nature of yourself, which is in fact a manifestation of God. Every religion sells you a disease. And then or put it this way, it convinces you you have a disease, and then it sells you the cure. The disease, though, is simply a product of the story that the religion is pushing. If you don't accept the story, you don't have the disease. So when I speak at Catholic churches and I talk to them about original sin, and I say, if you're really worried about original sin and your future salvation, there is an absolute, I can provide you with an absolute cure to that. Besides, you know, believing in Jesus, if that isn't working for you, I can provide you with an absolute cure. Convert to Judaism. We never heard of it. Right? So, religion presents you with a problem, and then it tries to give you the cure. But the problem is a product of the story, and it only lives in the story. It doesn't exist in reality, which makes all religious people, and don't exclude yourselves, I'm coming to you, it makes all religious people suffer from Munchausen. Now, if you have children and you're raising them in a specific religion, that's Munchausen by proxy. But if you're just talking about you, Munchausen. So Munchausen, is the name itself is the name of a Baron von Munchausen, I think it's 18-something in Germany, who was famous for making up wild tales about himself and his exploits. Munchausen is when you pretend to have a disease you do not have. Munchausen by proxy is when you pretend that your kid has a disease that he or she doesn't have. And you do it to get attention, right? So if you bought into the iatrogenic disease of a religion and you're living as if you have this disease, I'm suggesting you're all followers of Baron von Munchausen. And for those liberals on the liberal end, we tend to think, okay, we're not buying into any of this. But we still buy into, all you have to do is read the tweets, for example, in Tiny Buddha on Twitter, which is the premier site for New Age BS. And it's a wonderful site for those like myself who start every morning reading it and then writing my own versions of the things and posting them later. But the idea there is absolutely something wrong with you, though they're a little vague about what it is. But there are ways to get around whatever this disease is, and one of them is surrender. So a lot of religions talk about surrender, but even if you're not involved in a specific brand name sort of iatrogenically oriented religion, and you're on the liberal end, you are just spiritual but not religious, still there's this notion that there's something wrong with us. Because if there's nothing wrong with you, what are you doing here? Right? I mean, maybe you come for the fellowship and you know, maybe the food, but no. You know, I mean, you're new. Maybe you can do something about the food. You can insist. Because everyone else is satisfied with stuff that just doesn't... I mean, you'd never get away with that in a synagogue. Especially in the Catskills. But anyway, there's still this notion of something wrong with us, because if there's nothing wrong with us, we wouldn't need religion at all. So whatever it is you think is wrong, one of the solutions that, especially in the liberal end, but all the religions talk about is surrender. Now, I don't even know what surrender means, but I know you can't do it. And here's why you can't do it. Because the you that needs to be surrendered, I was just a couple of months ago before I got sick, I went to visit Father Thomas Keating, who was dying. I went there to cheer myself up. I was sick, but I wasn't dying. So I went to see Father Thomas. And Father Thomas, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but Father Thomas is the founder, along with Father Basil Pennington, of the Centering Prayer. He's been my priest since 1984. He's this amazing mystic who is who lives in a monastery in Snowmass, Colorado. So I went to visit him. And he talks a lot about the false self. You have to give up the false self. But when you explore with him what the false self is, it's your everyday self. So I asked him, how are you preparing for death? I'd met with him 2 years earlier when he told me he was going to die, and then he didn't die. And I said, geez, a little disappointed there that you didn't fulfill your promise, but okay, I'm back. And he said, well, I didn't say I was going to die. I said, I am dying. I'm still dying. I said, so how are you dying? How are you preparing? And he says, I'm letting go of the false self. So I've known him for a very long time, and he knows that I know that I think that's crazy. So I could have given the guy a break because he's dying, but I didn't. Why? So I said, but the self that is giving up the self is the same self. You can't surrender yourself because you are yourself, and the self that's doing the surrendering is in fact the self that needs to be surrendered. So you're just kidding yourself. It doesn't work. Now, I would claim that at the heart of every authentic spiritual practice, whether it's from a brand name religion or something you've put together yourself, whatever it is, if it's authentic, which means if it leads to some kind of awakening, it is at at its core a con. Right? It's a con. It's a brilliant con, and it has to be a con, and I'm going to define the con for you in a second. But it has to be that way, because if they told you the truth, you'd never buy it. The con is none of them work. Right? They all tell you, no, do X, Y, and Z. Sit up straight, put your feet flat on the floor, hold your breath until you can't breathe anymore. You know, meditate on a reading, meditate in silence, count your breaths, count, you know, whatever it is, count sheep. It doesn't really make any difference. None of them work. And I know, because I've taken all the courses you can possibly take, right? I've been initiated into every religion on the planet. I've even taken, communion with Father Thomas, only discovered Jesus is not gluten-free, and we do not stay at one at all. So... But they don't work. Or they don't work as advertised. That's better. They don't work as advertised. They do work, but not the way they tell you they work. So what's the problem? The problem is when you're meditating, for example, you're trying to slip from what I call the narrow mind to spacious mind. And you're trying to make that happen by breathing or whatever else you're doing. But you can't make that happen because it's the narrow mind that's sitting there counting your breaths. It's the narrow mind that's actually being reinforced by the practice. The con is to keep you doing it long enough until you realize that you don't have a problem. That's the con. That's the real huge, groundbreaking, earth-shattering shift that happens that we call enlightenment. D.T. Suzuki, who's this famous Zen teacher from the 60s, I think he died in the 60s, I'm not sure if any of you know, but he was once asked, Japanese guy, brilliant scholar and Zen teacher, he was once asked, what's enlightenment? He said, enlightenment is like ordinary life, except you're like 3 feet off the ground. Right? So it's just, you're dealing with the same crap you're always dealing with, but you're a little lighter when you're dealing with it. That's enlightenment. That's not what we want enlightenment to be. I mean, when I was in my teens and 20s, and I was very serious, both academically and cushion-wise, you know, in trying to become enlightened, I wanted something really different. I didn't want to be the same me I was. I wanted to be a different me, a better me, a holier me, you know, whatever I was imagining. I just, you know, I didn't want to be this. I wanted to be that. But the this that wants to be that is always this. And the more I go, I'm this, I want to be that, the more I reinforce this. Until you finally exhaust yourself. So I did this for a long, long time in the Zen world. And I did the Zen practice every day for years, 10 years I was in the Zen world. And I'm really practicing other things also, but really practicing this. And it goes nowhere. So I figure after 10 years, if you don't win something, I mean, something's wrong. So if you call most teachers, they'll tell you, oh, you really aren't trying hard enough. Keep going. It's your fault. It's always blame the seeker, right? You're just not doing it well enough, which is a great plan for marketing. Right? If it's always your fault, then you never stop coming to see me. So you keep paying, right? Because no, you're just not doing the work. But I called my Zen teacher, Dr. Tetsuo Uno. And I called him up and I said, look, I've been doing what you taught me to do for 10 years now and nothing is happening. What's with this? And he says, come and see me. I'm living in Miami. He lives in Massachusetts. Some of you may have heard this story before, but I go to see him. And I say, so what gives? And he said, okay, now you're ready to know that it doesn't work. But you only can accept that when you've exhausted it. And he says, now all you can do is just be yourself and let enlightenment take care of itself. Life will enlighten you. Practice just makes that a little harder. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't pray or chant or meditate. I do all those things. I do them, though, because I enjoy doing them. For the same reason I read books, for the same reason I play with my grandchild, for the same reason I write books. I do it because I enjoy doing it, not because it's going to get me anything, not because it's going to bring me enlightenment. If I sat in meditation in order to get enlightened, I would have quit a long time ago. I sit in meditation because I like to sit. That's it. So he says, it doesn't work. All you can do is live your life. So I want to make this distinction between surrender and being surrendered. What was explained to me, and I think this is true, is that practice, religion, living out your, as Baron von Munchausen, your iatrogenic story about something being wrong with you, you have to live that to the point where it just falls apart. It doesn't work. You know that it can't be right. You've done everything you're supposed to do, and nothing is happening, and the story starts to crack, and the disease starts to fall away. And then you are surrendered. But you didn't do it. Does that make sense? Right, the work is to surrender, but that can't fulfill that. You can't do that. So when you give up surrender, you have an opportunity to be surrendered by life itself. Now it's not pleasant as far as I understand. It's what 12-step people call rock bottom. It's what Catholics will call the dark night of the soul. Right? Every religion has its own version of it. But it's when you are absolutely bereft of everything that you've been clinging to make the idea that you can do this work. So your story, your disease, your practice, everything. And the best parable about this is the parable of Jesus on the cross. So I look at all the religious stories from every religion as a parable. They may be historical. I am totally uninterested. Well, I'm curious about it, but it's not my big thing. I'm really not interested in Jesus of Nazareth, but I'm really fascinated with Jesus of narrative. Right? The Jesus of the story. So in the story, especially the Gospel according to Mark, you know, these Gospels were written decades, if not almost, 70 years after Jesus' death. They're not eyewitness accounts, though they pretend to be. They're not histories, though they pretend to be. They're stories, but within the stories, there are parables, not just the ones that Jesus himself tells, but the stories about Jesus, I would say, are parables. They don't have to be literally true. They don't have to be historical. They can carry meaning and truth and wisdom because that's what stories, the best stories do. So in the Gospel according to Mark, which is the first gospel, written about 30 years after Jesus' death, if I remember right, Jesus is on the cross, and Jesus says only one thing on the cross. And that is, anyone know? Yeah, right? He says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, to impress you with the Hebrew. But he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? The brilliance, and then he dies. You know, in later Gospels, he says that, but then he comes back with other cooler things. Father, unto your hand I commend my spirit. Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. It is finished. All these things that we put in there because we hate the idea that all he said was, crap. Where's my story, which was all about I'm going to, be on the cross and cool things are going to happen. It's not happening. He lost his story. He lost everything. And all he can say is, my God, why have you forsaken me? When your God, however defined, your story, your hope, your whatever you cling to, when whatever you cling to is stripped away from you, and Jesus has it stripped away from him, you can't strip it away yourself. You can't crucify yourself. I mean, you can try. If you're flexible enough, you can nail your feet to something. And you can, I'm right-handed, I could probably, nail my left hand to something. But now what do I do? Right? You can't crucify your, you need a Roman. Everyone needs her Roman. You just got to have a Roman who'll finish this off. The Roman is life. It's reality. That's what crucifies us. Meaning, life itself, if you live it fully, will eventually take away everything that you've trusted to make sense out of life. Every safety net you've put down beneath you to make sure you don't have a hard landing if somehow you fall is gone. When all of that disappears, then you are surrendered, which means you're living without a net. You're living without certainty. You're living without any sense of control. You're living simply moment to moment, open to whatever is, and knowing you can't control any of it. Even though I know in New Age teaching, and many of us are involved in this, you create your own reality. Yeah, but only if you're off your meds. Right? You don't create your own reality. Make it snow. I'll wait, but not till winter. You can't create your own reality. You might say you create your response to reality. You can say all kinds of things which may or may not be true. But you can't say I create my own reality. That's ridiculous. You live in the reality that is presented to you at the moment. You either live in it well or you live in it poorly, but you live in that reality. You are not in control. And because you're not in control, you can't surrender. And because you're not in control, you can be surrendered. And because you can be surrendered, you can be awake, enlightened, and live a totally different way. Our fear is that if we're not in control, and religion is all about control. I mean, the reason you buy into a specific iatrogenic disease and live a specific life as Munchausen the Catholic, Munchausen the Jew, Munchausen the Muslim, whatever it is because that's really giving you control. I'm alienated from God, according to my parents and my rabbis, from my, you know, all my upbringing, but I control that alienation and can come closer to God by doing the 613 things that my synagogue told me I should do. The same thing if you believe that you have original sin and only Jesus can save you from that. That's fine, because you can control that by believing in Jesus. Right? That was Blaise Pascal's wager. Remember that term, Pascal's wager? Pascal, back in the, 1700s? Said, it's even if you don't believe, you should pretend. Because if you pretend to believe and there is no God, what have you lost? You know, you have to have fish on Friday. But other than that, what's the loss? A couple hours on a Sunday, you know. But if you don't believe and there is a God, then you're screwed for all eternity. Now, the problem with Pascal's wager is Pascal only imagined one God and one religion. He only imagined the Catholic God and the Catholic religion. Today, if you buy into the idea of the wager that you ought to believe in God just because if it's true, you're better off believing than not. The problem today is which God? Which belief? Right? I mean, I could take the wager and say, okay, Krishna. I'm going to go with Krishna. And it turns out to be Christ, I'm screwed. Right? It doesn't matter. I backed the wrong horse. So we don't know. So even that won't help you out. There's no escape from living with uncertainty, with living without knowing. But the person who's awake revels in not knowing. They're not afraid of it, though sometimes it can be frightening. They don't want certainty, because certainty means that you're living really, I would argue, that you're living a story, because in reality there's no certainty. I want to have the experience of, my God, why have you forsaken me? Have everything stripped away, and then see what's next. And my limited understanding of this is that what's next is A, undefinable, because then I would be, then I'd have control over it. But what's next is not as harrowing as what I imagine what next will be. We're living without a net. The problem is, and this is the wrap up here, the problem is you don't want to fall and hit rock bottom. The brilliant thing that reality can show us is that there is no rock bottom. That doesn't mean you don't, like 12-step people, hit a rock bottom. It just means there's another one and another one. And there's no end to rock bottoms. But there's no bottom, which you could say, oh my God, it's just always bad, and then it's worse, and then it's even worse. Or you could say, hey, I'm never going to hit the actual floor. The problem with falling out of the top of the Empire State Building isn't falling out of the top of the Empire State Building. It's landing. My understanding is there's no landing. That when you give it all up, well, you can't give it up. When it's all stripped from you, surrendered as opposed to surrender, when you've been surrendered by life and everything you're clinging to is taken away from you, and all you can do is be in this what I call divine free fall. And you guys can just call it free fall. I saw a little steam coming out of rock. Why divine? Why divine? Okay, fine. Just free fall. When you can just live in that free fall, there's a tremendous grace to it. And that's the real challenge. There's no methodology, though I like meditating and all that stuff. There's no methodology for living gracefully in the free fall. The methodology comes when you're actually there. So if you're trying to surrender, I mean, you can't quit and you can't win. So you just keep trying until you finally, you know, you give it up. But if you're trying to surrender, know that it isn't going to work, so that when it doesn't work, you're not going to beat yourself up. And then just settle into the reality as it is and live each moment without having a clue what the hell is going on. That's being surrendered. And being comfortable with not knowing. That is being surrendered. Thank you.